Folks, I am really excited to talk about our newest sponsor for the coaching staff, Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust, also All-American Used Cars and Trucks. Two really, really good businesses. I'm going to start with Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust. You know, it's hard to find a good mechanic. It's hard to find somebody that you trust. And, you know, long before this situation came about, we had been taking our cars to Ruiz for a year, year and a half, and they've done great, great work. They're honest. They're upfront. They can do everything. They, you know, take care of your motor, take care of your brakes, tires, oil, so simple stuff like oil changes, brake pads, mufflers, whatever you may need. Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust are going to take care of it for you. If you are in the Omaha area and you are looking for a quality, reasonably priced, customer-friendly situation, you're not going to regret giving Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust a chance here. They are located at 4839 North 90th Street, Omaha, Nebraska, 68134. You could give Esmeralda a call up there. Her number is 402-317-2572. And they'll get you taken care of. I'm saying this as a customer. We literally do not bring our cars anywhere other than Ruiz Auto Service and Exhaust for anything that we do from this point for the last year or two. So again, another business here, All American Used Cars or Trucks. If you're in the market for a used car or truck, go check out Juan Carlos's business there. 144th and I-80, 14706 Schooner Road here in Omaha. Go check it out here. If you're looking to exchange a car, buy, sell, trade, whatever it may be, you're going to get an honest deal from honest people. So go check out Ruiz Auto Service and Exhaust and All American Used Cars and Trucks. Good afternoon, good evening. My name is Marty Plum, and I am your host of a Pen and a Napkin podcast, the weekly coaching clinic you can carry around with you in your pocket. And here we are, episode number 100 of the coaching staff. B. Arthur in the house. We are ready for syndication. We are ready. People are going to be hearing reruns of this on TBS at 4 o'clock in the afternoon when they get off of work. We maybe will be on Comedy Central. That's probably too esteemed for us, but episode number 100 with my co-host and my friend, Mr. Tony D. Viss. Mr. Viss, how you doing, my friend?
I'm doing well. It's been kind of one of those weeks, just seems like it's long, like we're not going to get to the end of it, but it is Thursday, so the end is in sight. And all of a sudden, the temps are starting to go up again. I don't know what's going on here. But at the same time, I'm not going to complain. I'd rather it was warm than negative whatever. So, yeah, doing well. How about you?
Doing well. It's warm over here in the Big O. We like I told you, pre-roll here, it's a homecoming week at our school. We got clearance from Clarence, the superintendent today. A little airplane reference there for all of you. We get to wear shorts tomorrow, as long as they are appropriate shorts. So
not wearing their Daisy Dukes?
No, we don't need any of the kids getting the mysterious stomach flu or anybody like that in any way, shape or form. So, I will just wear my usual business, my casual business shorts, if you will. So that'll be nice to go to school in shorts tomorrow. And yeah, it has felt like a long week, but, you know, we're hanging in there. So, Tony, thought we just if you don't mind here, we talked last week. You were 75-80 pages into the book, and you texted me Monday or Tuesday, and you said you finished it up. So, give us the 30-second Siskel and Ebert review of Kings of Their Court.
You know, I didn't know a lot about the whole thing going in. I obviously had heard of Hunter Salas and then Chucky Hepburn, but did not know some of the other guys. And like we were kind of chatting, 9 of those guys went Division I. And then the other thing that I thought was kind of interesting too, you know, in this age of NIL, it seems like, and I'm, I don't know off the top of my head, but maybe it's all nine ended up transferring to other schools, you know, whether it was play or money or whatever the case may be. But, you know, man, Omaha had a lot of talent. And then the other thing that's absolutely crazy with the book as well, that you know, my jaw was on the floor. Those same two teams have played, I think they said, the last five state title games in the state of Nebraska, which is crazy because it's the largest class and you don't see that very often, but really enjoyed it. It's a very smooth read, lots of good information in it. Read it in less than a week and pass it along to my son.
Yeah, and there's no pictures or anything to skip over, you know. So that was impressive, Tony, that you got that done in less than a week. But I appreciate it. I know, you know, it was I appreciated the constructive criticism that you gave me off roll here or pre-roll, and yeah, it's coming quick here. It's September 12th. It's less than 3 weeks away from its official debut to the world here, and just excited to share it. Just excited to share it, and I'm really glad you enjoyed it, Tony. I'm really glad that you thought it didn't suck. Is music to my ears.
It did not. And I would say, you know, even if you're somebody like me who lives in a different state, doesn't know a lot about Omaha, you know, boys basketball history, it's a good read. I think anybody who likes basketball will enjoy reading it.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, let's dive in here. Episode number 100. Tony, we are at, we've reset the numerical system here. And we're going to go with zeros because I think we started this little gimmick about 30 episodes in. So I figure, and because I'm not very creative, I'm just going to keep rolling with it as well. So we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 athletes with either the number 0 or 00, 6 of them basketball players and 1 American footballer.
Oh boy. The only one that comes to my mind would be Orlando Woolridge back when he played with the Bulls and Jordan, but I don't think he's good enough to get on that list.
He was on my list. He was the big O was on my list, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so I thought Orlando Woolridge was just absolutely awesome. Little did I know that he was probably snorting about a pound of cocaine a day as well, so, you know.
Hey, yeah, I mean, back when you were with Michael, yeah, he had to have a role, I guess. Shoot, other zeros are double ought. Man. Bunch of basketballers, 1 football player.
1, 2, 3 of these players are still active. You got 5 basketball players left. 3 of them are still active.
3 still play. God. 0 in today's NBA.
0 or 00.
Shoot.
1 was on the Olympic team. 1's a former MVP. 1 is a multiple time all-star. I believe he was a gold medal winner in 2020 in Tokyo. 1 is a
drawing a blank.
1 is a defending world champion.
Jason Tatum?
There we go. Okay.
Okay.
2 more active players. Former MVP. I'm trying to think of a way to give you a hint without giving it away. Former MVP. Big fan of cupcakes.
Man, I'm stumped, Marty. I'm sorry.
Okay. All right. Well, let's go through it here. Russell Westbrook.
Okay.
Yeah. Dame Lillard.
Okay.
And then 2 retired basketballers, Gilbert Arenas, Agent 0.
Yeah, that would make sense with the nickname.
Yeah. Yes, it would. And the retired 00, the Chief, Robert Parrish. Yes.
Yeah.
And
speaking of drug users.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the footballer is the great offensive lineman from the Oakland Raiders, Jim Otto.
Oh, I didn't ever get that in a million years.
Well, so, yeah, so.
Not my best work.
That's all right, my friend. It's okay. I forgive you. So.
Thank you.
Episode number 100, and always very, very important to establish within your program, top to bottom, left to right, is roles. And a lot of people talk about roles when it comes to your players. And believe me, we'll touch on that. But Tony and I thought we would expand this to parent roles, assistant coaching roles, and administrative roles, and talking with your administration about those type of things. Tony, I know this is something, I thought I spent a lot of time on it when I was a younger coach. As I became more and more seasoned and experienced, boy, did we spend a lot of time talking about this. And it was at top of mind almost every day when I was coaching my teams.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things as a young coach, I think you maybe try to control more things. And, you know, if you don't do it, it's not done right or whatever. But you realize that the easiest way to eat an elephant is one bite at a time. And you've got to pass some of those things off, or you're going to drive yourself insane. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, there's just things that you need to pass off, and there's things that you need to do in the preseason before you get to your season that will make things run a lot smoother as well. And then you want to involve, like you mentioned, parents. I think, you know, it's one of those things where you have to learn to embrace and hand off some things to them. I think it helps them to feel ownership and maybe makes you feel a little bit more human. Mm-hmm. And then to make sure that you're working with your AD closely or your associate AD, whatever the case may be, closely, so that you get games and you get practice schedules and you get all those things answered.
Yeah. So let's start with players. It's a good place to start. It's the one that we probably spend the most time worrying about. And if you've listened to the pod for any length of time, you know my philosophy on roles. It's four parts: know, accept, embrace, and excel at your role. And I think that needs to be said for parents, for your assistant coaches, for your administration as well. It's your job to tell your players what their role is, what you envision their role to be. Not to say that it can't change, but, you know, that's your job. And then the other three, in my mind, it's up to the player to do that, to accept their role, to embrace their role. I'm going to be the best, you know, accepting their role is coaches ask me to do this and this and this. Embracing the role is I'm going to be the best, this, this, and this, and then excelling, going out and actually performing. And so again, I feel very comfortable about that philosophy. I think that when you have players that don't accept, embrace, and excel at their roles, and even then, when they don't excel at that role, I think there's some caveats there. But I don't think it was for me, Tony. It was very there was no negotiation when it came to accepting and embracing the role. You may not like it. You may only have 10 lines in the play where you wanted the lead role, but you've got to accept it and you've got to embrace it. And then you do your best to excel at it. And you hope that they excel at it. You want them to excel at it. You know that not everybody is going to excel at it. But I think those are the big things there that I would say about players. And like I said, I feel really comfortable in that. I've spent a lot of time on the pods talking about it. Anything that you want to add or anything that you do with your players now at Kennedy, that might be a little bit different with that and probably better than the way I did it, Tony.
You know, I think a big part of it, like you mentioned, Marty, is just explaining to them what their role is. And I think at times you want to make sure that their role fits their skill set.
Yep.
And that's super important. And in order for that to happen, you have to really kind of tune in and watch and make sure you understand what they can do. Don't ask them to do stuff they can't do. And then the other thing, you know, we've kind of talked about this. There are no small roles. You know, be a superstar in the role that you're given. It might not be, like you said, the large part that you want, but there are no small roles. And I think as a coach, that's one of the things we've got to highlight the importance of, is that we need everybody to do their job in order for us to be successful. And there are no small roles. Like, you know, we talk about big things and little things. Well, if you don't do the little things, you don't get to do the big thing you want to do, which is to win. And so communication of that role, highlighting the importance of all roles, I think are very, very important in order for your team. Because, you know, a lot of times kids might be upset, frustrated, whatever word you want to plug in there, because sometimes we as coaches maybe don't communicate to them what their role is, or maybe don't communicate to them accurately what their role is. And I think, you just have to have conversations with them because, as we've talked about before, where there's a lack of communication, negativity, confusion, whatever seeps in. And so you want to make sure those things are there. And then, like you said, hopefully the player on their side of things, understands what it is, embraces what it is, and puts their best foot forward in attempt to help the team do what it can. And so I think those are all very, very key things.
In 1993, Counting Crows referred to Omaha as somewhere in Middle America. More people know Omaha as the home of Warren Buffett, the Union Pacific Railroad, and the College World Series. Athletically, Nebraska is known for its dominance in college and high school football and volleyball, while basketball has perennially been on the back burner. But for one season in its largest city, basketball was king of the state. In a time of social and political turmoil in our country, three high school boys basketball teams from Omaha, Nebraska were ranked in the top 25 in the country, featuring some of the best talent that one city has ever produced anywhere in the country. Amongst these three teams were nine Division I basketball players, and all 15 starters from these three teams played collegiate athletics at various levels for at least two seasons. Kings of their court, three teams, one city, and the greatest basketball season in Nebraska high school history begins with the chaotic ending of the 2020 state tournament as the whole world was shutting down due to the COVID-19 virus. Over the span of the next year, these players, coaches, and parents navigated their basketball futures while also, like the rest of the United States and the world, worked through COVID quarantines, the George Floyd murders and riots, the political turmoil of the 2020 presidential campaign, and much more. One year later, the destinies of these three teams would intertwine themselves for the final time at the 2021 Nebraska State Basketball Tournament, where the crescendo to this story occurred 365 days after it began, with some of the best high school basketball any state has ever seen. Kings of their court, three teams, one city, and the greatest basketball season in Nebraska high school history is the story of highly driven individuals searching to achieve lifelong dreams and aspirations, both on and off the basketball floor, during a season that almost didn't happen. Kings of Their Court will be published on October the 1st, Tuesday, October the 1st. Kindle copies are $9.99, paperback copies are $19.99. Copies are eligible to be pre-ordered today, so be sure to get on Amazon.com and pre-order your copy of Kings of Their Court. So I think we're good with players, and we've talked extensively. Like I said, I feel good. So let's move on to something and other stuff, and especially in the preseason, that coaches should be thinking about, concentrating on, and that's conversations when it comes to roles with parents, with their assistant coaches, with their administrators. Which one do you want to start with, Tony?
Let's take the tough one right away. Let's go, parents.
Okay, you want to lead off?
Yeah, I think when you take a look at roles, one of the things, and I don't think we're necessarily unique at Kennedy with this, everybody has a booster club. And so you have that side of it, but there's also, we have what's called a parent support group. And so we have a boys basketball parent support group. And so that's something that we work closely with on a variety of areas. And the more parents you can get plugged in and involved in that, the better you can do. And so there might be things like with our poster. We do a poster before the season begins. It could be those who want to help out with getting the pizza after the games, because if we're on the road, we'll grab a pizza for, a couple, two, three players to split, whatever, on the way home. And they can line that up and get it from the different Papa John's for whatever in the city that we happen to be in. But there's all kinds of things. And so the more that you can kind of plug in and involve parents in that area, I think they feel like they have ownership in it. I think they feel like they're valued in it. And kind of like I mentioned a little bit ago, I think it shows that human side of us as coaches that we don't have all the answers. We can't do it all ourselves. And we kind of are in that same, in the boat together, hopefully pulling the oars in the same direction.
I had, parent responsibilities, and you covered a lot of that, how you can help us out there. I think one thing you can also do to help with those roles is to clearly communicate as much as you can, to be as transparent as you can be. And the vast majority of us do that. But you know, here's simple things that you could communicate that will help with role acceptance. You know, what times are we practicing? What days do we have off, especially in basketball, because we do have two major holidays, Thanksgiving and Christmas. Now, we're both in states where we have a state mandated moratorium where you cannot practice for 5 days over the holiday break. Christmas, it's a lot fuzzier, you know, and it's basically up to your determination. But kind of like what I've talked about before, I wanted my parents to know our summer schedule by April 15th at the latest, and preferably by April 1st, because I wanted to be able to say, plan your summer, be parents. Same thing with these two big holidays. Here's what we're going to be doing over Thanksgiving break. Here's what we're going to be doing over Christmas break. So things like that, days off. In that regard, hey, we are planning, we are not practicing on Saturday the 12th. And you've made that determination 2 weeks out or whatever. And so if the family wants to do something that day, if they got something planned, even if you play like crap on the 11th on Friday night, you need to follow through and not practice on the 12th.
Yeah.
You know, that type of thing. Sending out a weekly planner and just helping with logistics. And I think those type of things, when it comes to parent roles, it will help you with the things that you need help from your parents with when you eventually and inevitably are going to have to ask for it.
Yeah. And like you said, just the more you can communicate that schedule, they can kind of know what's going. Make sure you stick to the schedule, just like, you know, you want your players there by a certain time before practice begins, you know, different things. Just make sure that you stick to that schedule. And the more you can get everybody on the same page and they feel like they have an idea of what's going on, they're not, you know, kind of fumbling around in the dark. I think it helps out when you have to ask for, you know, the help that you're inevitably going to need. And then it also helps with your communication so that they feel comfortable approaching you if they have concerns or issues.
Mm-hmm. I also think it's important, Tony, that you clearly communicate and set the standard early on about the stuff that makes parents at times, the stereotypes that makes it tough to work with parents. The more seasoned and experienced that I got, the more I was, you know, for lack of a better way of saying it, I was pretty direct. Now, my dad, who's a pretty smart guy, he gave me a quote early on in my career. I think it was probably my second year as a head coach. And we were dealing with some things. And he said, Marty, and here's the direct quote here, Tony, everyone loves their kid a little bit more than the other kids. Mm-hmm. And man, did that stick with me. I think that one of the things that you have to keep in mind when you're talking about roles with parents and having these tough conversations to establish roles, to establish these boundaries, you know, you can ask for rational understanding, but for a lot of people, it's hard to be rational about their own child. More often than not, you're going to have parents that greatly overestimate their child's abilities and skills. And a lot of that just comes from love. You and I have been there, Tony. We've, you know, your four children are all adults. All my kids are out of the house and they're at least in college. And so we really realize that and we love our children to death. But I think, you know, I think I kept a pretty good head on my shoulders when it came to that stuff because of my background with it. But you know, there was probably a time or two where that got in the way. And so I think when we're talking about roles and having these hard conversations, and I think these hard conversations are important to have. I know, you have a parent meeting every year at Kennedy. So did we pretty much every place that I was at. And one of the things that I did last year is I literally, said, you know, I had numerous parents ask me, hey, what can I do to help this season? And I started off immediately with, hey, the number one thing I can ask for you to do is to keep, and I'm reading this directly off of the slide. And if anybody wants this, you know, feel free to reach out to me, apenandanapkin@gmail.com, or you can direct message me on Twitter. But the number one thing I can ask you to do is to keep the focus on the team's goal this season. Let's do all that we can do to do something that we haven't done in a long time. So cheer for everyone during the games. Spend honest quality time together off the floor as parents. release your child to the game. That's an old Bruce Brown thing. Stay steady in good times and bad. Both are going to happen, so don't be surprised by either. And have fun as a parent. If you're having fun, your kids are going to have fun. And we tried to emphasize the positives, but we also had a thing of, hey, here's what not to do. And we put together a list. I put together a list of five or six things. Here's the things that are going to tear us down. Don't criticize the coaches or other players in front of your daughter. Be a great example to your child on how to handle both success and failure. Don't put any undue expectations or too large of expectations on the kids. Keep your personal frustrations to yourself. Don't gossip with other parents about other players or parents on the team. And then kind of the kicker, and I forget where I got this from. I think it was a Snow Valley thing. It might've been a Jamie Smith thing. We have 21 possible opponents on the floor this season. Let's not make ourselves the 22nd opponent. You know, and some people took that to heart. Some struggled with that. And more than likely, if you're a normal coach in a normal situation, that's going to be pretty par for the course, but at least you have set those standards. Your parents know your expectations. Now it's up to them to accept and embrace and excel at them.
Yeah. And like you said, just got to communicate it and hopefully they're followed. They won't always be. And just know that if they're not, you have to have a plan to be able to deal with that.
What else you got, buddy?
You know, I think as far as like with, you know, just kind of going through with the parents and different roles and stuff, you know, just make sure it's communicated clearly. Like if we had situations, because you're going to have conflict from time to time. The only thing I ever asked had a 24-hour rule. So if we played on Tuesday, you wanted to talk, let's don't talk right after the game. Let's give it 24 hours. And if you need to talk Wednesday, Thursday, let's wait till then. And we can do that. You know, and then the other thing too, sometimes with parents, like you said, is just communicating the weekly thing. I think one of the things I try to do is our Google Classroom and then making sure that I communicate through email with them on a weekly basis, just give them a heads up of what's coming up. I have the Google Calendar that I try, and I've been working on that already. I've got all 21 of our games on there. I've got one of our scrimmage dates on there, and different things that go along with that. But just, I think those are items that you can give out there to them. And then the other thing too, like with parents, you know, banquet is one of the things that you can have them help with as well. You know, whether that's serving the food at the banquet, whether that's having them provide, you know, whatever food stuff and food items at the banquet or drinks or whatever, cups. But just make sure that you include them in that. Sometimes they like to do the highlight video. And so you can give them clips to include in that and let them put music behind it and come up with the highlight video. But there's all kinds of ways you can involve them. You know, you just have to kind of reach out and appeal to their talents.
How do you balance it, Tony, where you have a parent that wants to be involved, but you are apprehensive about having them be involved where for a variety of different reasons, whatever that may be. How do you do that? How do you keep the dad who used to be the coach of the junior high team 10 years ago and he thinks he's John Wooden, or the mom who's going to email you 10 times a day about the banquet that's 4 months away? You know, how do you manage those situations?
Yeah, I think sometimes it's, you know, it's one of those things where if you're a little bit unsure, there's a variety of areas. Like if you're unsure, can they handle it? Give them a small task. And if they perform that small task well, then you can kind of increase the difficulty, if you will, or maybe the number of tasks that you give them. If it's stuff where they're asking stuff that's months in advance, you know, you might say, hey, something I'm definitely going to keep in mind, but you know, we're in November right now. Why don't you wait till maybe January and have all that a little bit more firmed up, and you can ask me then, and I can give you a little bit more details, but just make sure, you know, give me a few, you know, give me some time in order to figure those things out. And with the dad, you know, I used to coach these kids. I've coached them in travel ball or whatever the case may be. You know, that one's always kind of a tricky one to walk a little bit as far as things go with that, because, you know, maybe they want to be your pseudo assistant coach or stuff like that. And you have conversations with them, share things that are, how do I say it? Share things that are okay to share. Like, don't go too much. You give them information that, sensitive information that you don't want to share with them, because you don't want that getting back to other people and stuff. But have conversations with them, and stuff. But I think on that one, you have to be careful, because obviously there's you probably have an assistant coach that you work with already, but you don't want to be rude to them or anything like that. Just, share a few things here and there, and keep that conversation, keep that relationship open. And maybe what you end up doing is, hey, we're in this fall league. I can't coach it. The other guy on staff can't coach it. Yeah. Would you like to handle this for us?
Yeah. How much, it's that art of coaching where, you can't completely shut them out, but you have to keep them at arm's length as well. And how do you do that? That's a difficult thing to navigate.
Yeah, I agree. That is an art, and it's one of the things where I would love to tell you from the science of it, you do this, that, and the other. Like you said, it is an art, and you have to be able to read people and read the other person and figure those things out. And so I don't know if I have a black and white, this is how you do it type thing. But if there are red flags that pop up, you have kind of that spidey sense, if you will.
Yeah.
Just be careful and make sure that you tread lightly. And like I said, give them small things. If they prove that they're trustworthy and can handle it and stuff, then give them a little bit more medium things. But make sure you have those trust things answered first before you open the door too wide.
Yeah. How about assistant coaches, Tony? How do you establish roles with your assistant coaches? What are some key things that you looked at there?
It's always kind of been a thing that's fluctuated. Like, when I've had different assistant coaches, I do a lot of like position work, and it's to say a lot, but I do position work every day. And so we will do times like, okay, what are you more comfortable with? You're more comfortable with post or with perimeter gets. And so whichever one they take, I just take the other one. That doesn't bother me. Mm-hmm. And then I have them have a conversation like, what are your strengths? And they're like, well, I'm really good at scouting. And so maybe they help you with the scouting reports. And then after time, if they show that they can do it, maybe you begin to give them like, hey, I'll take, for lack of a better word, I'll take Iowa City West here. Why don't you do Iowa City High? And then if they show that they can do that and do it well, then maybe you begin to give them more opponents to do and kind of take the load off you there a little bit. And then in games, I have a conversation with my assistant coach like, hey, I can only talk to them in sound bites, because with watching the game and doing this, that, and the other, when they come out, if you could really kind of have them sit by you and go maybe into that paragraph rather than sound bite information with them, that would be super helpful for me. And then, to be honest with you, a lot of times in games, I'm kind of the bad cop. If you could kind of build them up and let them know, hey, here's what he means, and go that direction. But as far as like planning stuff goes, there are things there too you can do. Like, I share my Google Calendar with my assistant so that he has it. He's got more of a real job where he works out in the real world with farmers insurance and stuff.
Sure.
So that he knows, but it helps him be able to plan, because he coaches his kids on the weekends. He does like their AAU teams and stuff, their travel ball teams. But yeah, I mean, you just got to find that relationship that you have with them, and what's that balance, and what can you make work. Mm-hmm. And once you kind of figure that out and you have that symmetry, it just helps things go really, really well. But I think one of the things you're going to want to do is to sit down, have a conversation. What do they feel comfortable with? What things do they do and do well? Give them some things. If they prove that they can handle it, give them more responsibility and more things. But you've got to find that chemistry, I think, is the word that I'm looking for. You have to find that chemistry and how it works well between you and your staff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's important, communication, obviously, simple thing, but I think it's important, like, especially as you bring somebody new into your program, here's my vision. Here's my vision. Here's what I need from you. Yeah, and again, like you said, Tony, what are you good at? What do you like to do? Okay, I can, I want, I can have you take this and this and this. And one of the things, again, during my 2 years off, I put together a list of delegation. And again, if anybody wants that, just, email me a pen and a napkin at gmail.com or DM me. But just, I realized that I needed to delegate more stuff. And I got, you know, great quote from Mike Nabors, if it doesn't involve winning, I don't do it. And that's something I really lived by the last 4 years, that I was just going to delegate more and more and more. I was going to give myself more of a life outside of it. And my assistant coaches did a great job with it. There were times where I would have to kind of train them, and I'm using air quotes there, Tony, you know, train them, but share your vision. This is what we're going to do. This is what we believe in our program. Are you okay with it? If you're not okay with it, then maybe it's just best that we don't work together, if that's a necessary conversation that you need to have. But I think that vision, and then, you know, kind of again with that, like you talked about, Tony, try to figure out what responsibilities that they want, responsibilities that they can handle, and clearly set those boundaries and those standards with your assistant coaches so they realize that, and they know what to expect on a daily basis, that you're just not going to walk in on Wednesday and say, hey, we got Iowa City West on Friday night, start scouting them tonight. Well, yeah, that would have been good to know 2 weeks ago, Coach Viss, you know, type of a thing. But they know what that is, and I think that's really important. One other thing I would like to add to that, Tony, and I'll turn it back over to you. When it comes to that communication, that vision for the program, another thing that I think is really important, you talked about practice organization and how to communicate with players in practice. Your bench organization is a big part of it when you get into games. I was very, very clear. This is how I want. This is the communication flow we're going to have. And that kind of came out of my time when I was at SCUT. And man, I had three or four just really, really smart basketball people. Jeff Ritz, Mark Polacek, Adam Ronfelt, Sarah Goodwin, just off the charts. But sometimes we would get into games and I'd be hearing ideas from all over the place. I'm like, okay, we gotta figure this out because I'm spending so much time. Mark, wait, you know, boom, 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 you know, and we got it figured out. And we kind of came up with our flow. And so I spent more time, and again, it's things you learn along the way, that bench organization and how we're going to flow things there and who's going to have those responsibilities during games as well. And so I think that was something that we really talked about and emphasized and really worked on to make sure that everybody's role was understood on game night as well.
Yeah, and one of the things that John does that's really, really good when we get together on the varsity staff is, you know, when we go into a timeout, he visits with us and gives the guys kind of a chance to kind of have their conversation, and then we give him our ideas. He takes that to them. We go into a halftime locker room. Before we go in, we usually spend, you know, some minutes as a staff sharing what we're seeing, adjustments and different things like that. And he goes in and gives that one united voice rather than him talking and then Coach Rubis talking and then Coach Williams, then myself or Coach Ethier or whoever. And so I think, like you said, it's just important to have that structure and organization so that they're hearing one voice, you're hearing one voice rather than five voices. And like, holy crap, I got a million ideas in my head. I'm trying to pay attention to the game and it can just turn into where it gets a little bit overwhelming.
Yep. How about administration? Let's cap off this portion of the pod here, Tony, talking about administration and your role with the administration. I'll let you take the lead on this one, buddy.
Yeah, we just got a new AD last year, and so some of it was kind of kind of figuring out, you know, how things were going to work with him and stuff, and it's been really, really well. But you know, one of the things that I've been working on this last summer is our schedule as far as the non-conference stuff really changed. John's gotten into this MVC versus CIML matchups. So they do it a couple times during the year and they're really, really fun matchups, but we lose that game with them because they're not going to bring their sophomore teams and do the sophomore version of it. And so we had to go out and find some games. And so that's been a part of what I've been doing recently, is trying to find in and fill in those games with it. And so just working with him, you know, hey, Sean, this is what I'm thinking. This is the date that we had kind of agreed to. What are your thoughts? Yep, I'll get the contract, you know, and get that put on to bound and stuff like that. So that part's been important there. And then the other thing too, you know, with recently have taken over the boys tennis program. And so just trying to figure out fundraising and how to do that and, you know, trying to line up and grow the number of people that are involved in it. And so those have been conversations that I've been having with him. But, you know, you've got to use your AD in their expertise in this field to try to put yourself, whether it's games or growing your program or, you know, just overall, as far as like fundraising, how to do those things. And so I think those are important, the things that you can do as far as roles that you can figure out that you work with your admin team.
I don't think you had told me you are officially the tennis coach.
Known it for probably about a month now. But yeah, that ended up getting that. So, you know, I'll be watching some Johnny McEnroe, Jimmy Connors videos with the wood rackets and everything.
I want to see you freak out on the head judge like Johnny Mac used to.
Be serious.
And I want to see you with the same afro that Johnny Mac had of circa 1980.
Oh, I think those days are long gone.
I never did get to see the Hubie Brown, the outfit there. So maybe I'll make a road trip over to the CR and check it out in person.
Okay.
Yeah. Here's a question I wish I would have asked my ADs, Tony. And as we put this together, this is something that popped into my head. And in my 18 years as a head coach, here's a question I never asked my athletic director, and I wish I would have. Want to know what it is?
Yeah.
Okay. What do you want my program to look like? I mean, because, you know, it would just be good to know what do you want it to look like? How do you want, you know, the Fort Calhoun girls basketball program to look like? What do you need to see? What do you consider to be a successful program? Give me the details. Give me the benchmarks that I can tangibly, and I know there's intangibles with it. Are people happy? You know, that's an mm-hmm. intangible, you know, that type of thing. But as much as you can, what do you want my program to look like? And I really wish that was a question. And if I were ever to do it again, that would be the first question I would ask in the interview process. What do you want the program to look like? If you're all about winning, and if I don't win 20 games a year, probably not going to work for us, because that's not. Now, do I want to win? Yeah, I want to win like crazy. But, mm-hmm. you know, I'm more about the transformation than I am, you know, the winning, although I want to win.
The transaction. Yeah,
exactly. So, so I, for me, and again, this just hit me like a bolt of lightning a couple of days ago when I was getting ready for today. Why didn't I ask that question? And man, do I regret not asking that question. And if I were ever to do it again, that would be my first question that I would ask of my administration, and not just my AD, but I would probably ask it of the principal. I would ask it of the superintendent, or any of the people that I feel like I need to ask that question to, because it would be good to know what do they want it to look like. I think that would be very, very high, not very high, the highest thing on my list. Am I crazy, Tony?
No, I mean, that was when you were saying, do I want to know? That was kind of the thing I would, you know, what does success of our program look like for you? What are your expectations? I mean, I think those are things that are important to know so that we kind of know what the target is and what to hit.
Mm-hmm. I would also, you know, I think it's important, like you're talking about boundaries. You know, and when I say boundaries, you know, AD, you know, what's your role in the sense of, are you going to be on the bus with us? Are you, you know, how often do you see yourself in the gym? Are you going to be in the gym every day just because you're a hoops junkie? Or are you just going to stop by once a month? Or what's it going to be here? You know, what are your expectations for me when it comes to communication? And every athletic director that I worked for was a little bit different. My most recent athletic director wanted a copy of practice every day. Which is fine. Okay. You know, here you go. Here's a copy of practice every day. And he had his reasons. It's fine. You know, and he clearly communicated with it. And so I did it, you know, and it's good. But you know, what are those things that we're looking at here, and what, you know, what type of boundaries do you want to establish? If you're a coach that doesn't feel, you know, why are you in my gym every day? You know, you need to ask that question if that's the way you are. I didn't care. It was their job. Their job was, in my mind, their job was to oversee me. And their job was to make sure that, for lack of a better way of saying it, I wasn't screwing up, that I was doing my job. Just like it's my job to look over my assistant coaches. So that type of stuff didn't bother me. But I think it's important that if you are concerned about those type of boundaries, I think that it's important that you have those conversations with your administration and get that straightened out so you know exactly where they are at. And the clearer communication that you can have, the better it can be.
Yeah, and I think that's the one thing that's been probably the highlight or the theme through all this, Marty, is the importance of communication.
Yep. Coaches, if you are in the Omaha, Council Bluffs, Lincoln metropolitan areas and surrounding areas, it is that time of year again. It is time for the 2024 MBCA Fall Coaches Clinic Series. We're going to start this on Wednesday, September 18th. We're going to go 4 weeks in a row, September 18th, 25th, October the 2nd, and October the 9th. And we have got a great lineup of coaches. Drew Johnson, women's basketball coach at Nebraska Kearney. Marty Levinson, new men's basketball coach at Nebraska Kearney. Tim Sandquist, head men's basketball coach at Kirkwood Community College. Carrie Amy, the new women's basketball coach at the University of South Dakota. Mark Swoboda, from my alma mater, Briarcliff University. Go Chargers, head men's basketball coach there. Coach Swoboda is going to be down. Amy Williams, head women's basketball coach at the University of Nebraska, is going to be one of our guests. We've got a couple more slots to fill. So it is going to be a great series of clinics. It's going to be located at Legends Sports Bar here in Omaha, 72nd and Pacific Street, just east of 72nd Street there. And for those four clinics, $80 is going to cover your clinic fees, the beverages, the food, and the camaraderie, the networking, all of those different things you're going to have at the Metro Basketball Coaches Association Coaches Clinics here this fall series. It's going to be a great run of coaches, so I encourage you, get signed up today. If you want to get signed up, if you want more information, you can send an email to Tom Crable at mbcaomaha@gmail.com. And Tom will get back to you. He'll get you all the information that you need. So coaches, get signed up for this fall's run of coaches clinics for the Metro Basketball Coaches Association. Well, Tony, you know one group of people that has never failed to communicate with whomever they've come across.
Definitely in their concert, Europe.
Started a new book last night, Tony.
What's up?
It's a biography of one of my favorite bands as a kid, Guns N' Roses.
Ooh.
Yeah.
So, Slash and Axl?
You bet. And I just got to the part of Duff McKagan. Yep. Yep. Bass player out of Seattle. Just got to the part where they were just signed by Geffen Records. So they're getting ready to record Appetite for Destruction. So.
It didn't do too bad.
Yeah, they did okay. They did okay. First concert I ever went to. Did I ever tell you that?
No, really?
First concert I ever went to, September the 6th, 1992, Minneapolis Metrodome, the old Hubert H. Humphrey Metrodome. It was
classic.
Yeah, it was. Homer Hankey's. The opening band was Faith No More, and they were terrible. Oh, my goodness. They were
really?
They were bad. They were so bad. But it was the summer of 92, late summer of 92, and it was Metallica at their height with the Black Album, and then Guns N' Roses played after Metallica, and that was my first concert. It was Faith No More, Metallica, and Guns N' Roses back in 92, so pretty awesome. So
yeah, I don't remember the year, but mine was 38 Special and Motley Crue.
Oh,
kind of an interesting pairing.
Yeah, that is. Hold on loosely, but don't let go. Yeah, that's a great song, by the way.
That is. Yeah. That is.
There's another. Is it? Oh, that's Night Ranger.
Sister Christian, baby.
Well, Sister Christian, and then When you close your eyes, do you dream about? That's a good one too. So,
Your boy band days are coming back.
hey, I've got some news coming here in a couple of weeks about when it comes to music. I got something in the works here, and it's gonna, I'm telling you, I'm so excited for it. It's gonna be a lot of fun. And I'm excited. So I'll tell you when we're all done, but I don't wanna ruin it. So,
Don't ruin the surprise.
all right, trivia here. As we digress, we've never done that before here on a pen.
Oh,
You know,
no,
no.
especially on the
No. Thank you, B. Arthur.
100th episode. You're welcome, Rue.
NBA season is closing rapidly. Here in a little bit, Tony and I are going to give our Atlantic Division preview here. And I started thinking about the NBA a little bit, and I started thinking about the NBA draft for some reason, Tony. We're probably going to have one of the best, last year's draft, and people weren't nearly as excited for it. The next couple of years, looks like we're going to have some really, really good talent coming in. And I started thinking about teams like the Bulls and the Utah Jazz and the Portland Trail Blazers and Brooklyn probably doing some tanking this year. They will sag for flag, if you will.
Ooh.
So I started thinking about the NBA draft. Here is my question for you this week, Tony. Two franchises in the NBA have had the number one overall pick the most amount of times. Both of these franchises have had the number one overall pick six different times. Can you name these two franchises? I'll give you a hint. Both in the Eastern Conference.
Okay. That gives me a 1 in 15 chance.
It does. That's a good job there, mathlete.
I'm going to throw the Hornets out because they haven't been around that long. So now I'm at 1 in 14. I'm going to get rid of the Raptors, 1 in 13. Celtics seem like they're good all the time. Let's go with Cleveland Cavaliers.
Cleveland, yes, and it counts.
Oh.
That is one.
All right.
So now you've got three guesses to get one right to get the prize each week.
One more.
Yeah.
Let's go with Milwaukee Bucks.
Incorrect.
Dang it. Philadelphia 76ers.
Incorrect.
So moving on.
You are down to one guess.
Probably wrong, but I'm going to go with Washington.
And it counts. Absolutely. Tony Viss from the baseline. Yes.
Oh.
Yes. The Washington Wizards, formerly Washington Bullets, six times. Sacramento and Houston have picked number one five times. I thought it was interesting, Tony. There are six franchises that have never picked number one overall.
Oh,
Yeah, here they are. Denver, Indiana, Memphis, Miami, Oklahoma City, and Utah.
wow.
Those are the
Okay.
six franchises that have never picked number one overall. So I thought that was interesting. You nailed it, buddy. You got it.
Nice. Blind squirrel finds a nut every once in a while.
Yep. Or, and because of that, here's your reward.
Always we have the meat. Wait.
Yes, there you go. And you know who is going to pick up the tab for Arby's this week, Tony?
Who's got our tab this week for Arby's? Let's go with, man, I'm trying to remember if I even looked lately as far as who's signing some big contracts.
Big one signed this week. Some people were kind of confused why it hadn't happened already. Played for Team Canada this summer.
Oh, Jamal Murray.
Jamal Murray is pieing Arby's for the coaching staff here. 4 years, $208 million. Congratulations, Jamal Murray, for signing that large contract. Well deserved. In fact, when he signed that, our guy Mel Allen said,
How about that?
"So we are going to jump into it, our TWIB segment this week here, Tony." Before we get into our previews here, we've got three quick ones here. Angel Reese out for the year with a wrist injury. Thoughts on that, my friend?
I hate that it happened for her. I mean, she's really had a really good year. Yeah. I mean, if you go through and take a look, her rebounding average, the amount of double-doubles she's posted, she has way outperformed her seventh position drafted in the WNBA. But you hate that it happened to her. It sounds like it's a wrist surgery, and we'll be back and hopefully able to have an even better sophomore season.
Yeah, I saw. Okay, yeah, here it is on ESPN. I read this the other day. The 10 best rookie seasons in WNBA history. Candace Parker was number one, Tamika Catchings two. They ranked Caitlin Clark's season the third best rookie season ever. Man, I didn't realize she's up to 19 a game. Wow. You know, so
she had 16 last night, but was 1 for 10 from the three.
Yeah. Yeah.
She normally won't do that. But the other thing that was interesting too is she would drive to the hoop and they're allowing a lot of contact. And so to kind of get them off her, she's physical back. And they called, and a little bit, I didn't watch a ton of it last night, but a little bit I did watch, they called it for two offensive fouls. And I thought the referees were kind of buying into the embellishment by the defenders. But at the same time, if the refs are going to call it, you go ahead and you do it.
Yep, you keep playing. So Maya Moore, number four. I didn't realize this. Maya Moore played 8 seasons in the W. She was in the finals 6 times.
Yeah, she might be the greatest winner when you go through and take a look at high school, college, and WNBA, yeah, along with Olympics, maybe of all time for women.
Yeah. Asia Wilson, 5. Bree Stewart, 6. Ella Deladon, 7 with the Chicago Sky. Taurasi, 8th. Tina Charles, 9th. And then they ranked Angel Reese's year at the 10th best ever, 13.6 points and 13.1 rebounds. First player to ever average 13 rebounds a game in the W history. So, yeah, she's had a great year. It's just, and she normally, it's kind of like with Chet Holmgren. Normally, that would be the rookie of the year, but there's this other generational player that is unfortunately, yep, stealing your thunder here. Asia Wilson misses her first game in years, Tony. And looked like the Aces were going to knock off New York in New York, but New York comes back with the victory last weekend. This was a few days ago, but you know, the Aces are just, again, they kind of take 2 steps forward, 1 step back. But a big win for New York, and they found a way to get the W.
Yeah, and I'd be, if I was Las Vegas, it would give me some hope, just from the standpoint we competed with, you know, potentially what's the best team in the W without our best player. And then Asia played last night and ended up scoring them with her game, ended up having the most points in WNBA history in a season.
Yep.
And the Aces were able to win in Indiana, becoming only the second team to defeat the Liberty to defeat the Fever after the Olympic break.
Yeah. Yeah. They have been really rolling. Looks like Indiana is going to be the 6th seed. They're going to be matched up with either Connecticut or Minnesota. It is. It's a tough matchup, but hey, got to go out and collect your scars, you know? So, Memphis, we're going to delve into the college game. And obviously over the next few months, we'll be delving more and more into the college game. Penny Hardaway, they got a new athletic director, and just within a very short amount of time, and I forget exactly what the timeline is, but it wasn't a whole lot of time after the AD got hired. Penny released 4 of his staffers, 3 coaches, I believe, including Rick Stansberry, whose ethics in recruiting over the years may have been questioned from time to time.
Rick's a little shady.
They send a letter to the NCAA recruiting and academic violations. He says it's kind of going on. Before this, since the season ended, there were 5 other staffers that have moved on. They had 7 players transfer out after last season. It sounds like a lot of chaos in Western Tennessee right now, Tony.
It does. And then the other thing on top of that, like they showed the guys that they replaced some of these assistant coaches with, and I'll give Penny credit. He ended up getting some quality guys this late in the game.
Who did he end up getting? I didn't see that.
One of the guys that played it, it was a coach at Duke. Was it Nolan Smith? Is that right?
Oh, yeah. Former point guard there.
He was one of them. And then they had some others, and I cannot remember off the top of my head who they were, but he had some quality hires, Nolan Smith being probably the top of that list. But I would say, and again, you know, I would say the time for Penny at the college game, that clock is ticking. I think you'll see him be on an NBA bench as an assistant coach fairly soon.
Yeah, he had issues with the Wiseman recruitment, you know, and yeah, just kind of playing probably a little too loose, a little too fast with some of these rules, and some guys fell on the proverbial sword. And, you know, ultimately, I think I saw he's been there 6 years. I think he's only been to the tournament twice. And Memphis,
not a lot of bang for your buck.
Yeah. And Memphis,
and the headache.
Yeah. You know, Memphis is a proud, proud school. They have an excellent college basketball tradition. Calipari, you go back to 85, they made it to the Final Four.
Was that Dana Kirk?
That was Dana Kirk and Keith Lee, I believe it was.
Yeah.
He was their best player. And they made it, you know, back in 72, you know. So yeah, this is a program that has a lot of pride. It is a basketball city through and through. You know, the prodigal son has come home, but man, things just haven't worked out the way that everybody hoped it would. And I'm sure people in Memphis are disappointed. Obviously, it's probably too late in the game to replace Penny at this point, but it's been done before. You know, Chris Beard was let go late during the season. I mean, there's not an exception for this. It's happened before. So, we'll have to see what happens here, but something definitely to keep an eye on as we head into the college basketball season.
No doubt about that. But yeah, I do think you're going to see that position open, maybe not now, but I think at the end of the season, I think they'll just decide to part ways and they'll come to an agreement.
Yep. Coaches, you know just as well as I do that we're always looking for new and different ways to motivate our players and programs. But sometimes it's hard to find that perfect source that we're looking for. Over the past 25 years, I've collected hundreds of handouts to help motivate my players and programs, and now I'd like to share some of my favorites with you. The A Pen and a Napkin 101 Best Handouts booklet is now available to you for only $15. In this booklet, you'll find motivational material for all types of situations and individuals to help you communicate your values to your players and program. For ordering information, you can either DM me on Twitter or email me at apenandanapkin@gmail.com for details. All right, Tony, it is hard to believe, but we are 6 weeks away from the start of the NBA season. It seems like the season just got over, but then we had the Olympics, which kind of quenched a bit of the thirst there, if you will. And now we're heading into it. So we're going to do like we did last year. Every week, we're going to take a few minutes, give our previews of each division. We're going to start in the East and move our way westward. We're going to start with the Atlantic Division, Tony. It's an interesting layout. Probably really top heavy here. I'm guessing we're going to be pretty well in unison, except for maybe one spot here that we may debate over a little bit. But who do you have for your cellar dweller in the Atlantic?
That's an easy one. I've got the Brooklyn Nets.
Yep, as do I. You know, really, really enjoyed my conversation earlier this summer with Tim Capstraw, the radio play by or the radio color guy for the Nets, but it's gonna be a build here. There's not a lot to work with, and they're just acquiring assets for the rebuild. They're probably going to sag for flag, pretty hard here. You know, Cam Thomas, you know, he may average 30 points a game. He may shoot 35 times a game. I agree with you there that the Nets are going to be at the bottom here. Right above them, I had Toronto.
Yep.
A little bit more light at the end of the tunnel for Toronto. They've got Scotty Barnes to work with. RJ Barrett is still relatively young. Mm-hmm. They made the trade for Emmanuel quickly to be the starting point guard. You know, so four of their five starters, they've got Grady Dick listed as a starter here, and it's time to see what he can do here. But this is going to be a year of experimentation. Is Scotty Barnes an alpha?
Max.
Yeah, is he, you know, and he's on the, as Brian Windhorst calls it, he's on the fun max right now. How do RJ Barrett and Scotty Barnes work together? Is quickly really a starting point guard in the league? It's just going to be kind of a scout year for the Raptors. They've just got a couple of more guys than Brooklyn does, and that elevates them in my mind.
Yeah, and it's like you said, it's one of those things where do they have the pieces to win a title? No, but they have the pieces to kind of be on the periphery to get into the playoffs. And they've got some nice things, but like you said, they've got good young pieces, but I think they realize, you know, with getting rid of Siakam and getting some of those draft picks, that they're going to have to hit well in the draft to put a foundational piece along there. I mean, I think Scotty Barnes is a nice player. I just don't know if he can be your number one guy if you're trying to lift the big trophy at the end.
Yeah, I would agree with you there as well, my friend. So, who did you have in third, Tony?
This one was hard. I've kind of flip-flopped back and forth on it. The team I am going to put in third is going to be the New York Knicks. And I thought about putting the Sixers there because Joel Embiid's health and sometimes getting injured and stuff like that. But Philadelphia, I just think Maxey's ready to take another step. I feel like the piece of Paul George is that 3-and-D player. Obviously, they lost Tobias Harris, but I also like some of the other pieces they put around there. You know, if Embiid goes down, they have Andre Drummond. Mm-hmm. And so I decided with that, I would go with the Knicks in spot three. But man, I feel bad because that's a really, really good third place team in that division.
So I thought this is maybe where we would flip and flop on if there was a chance. And I had it just the opposite. I had Philly third. But, and I hope this makes sense, Tony, if both teams are healthy going into the playoffs this year and they get matched up, let's say in the Eastern Conference semifinals or something, I would pick Philly. If I knew Philly was going to be healthy for all seven games, if I knew, and eventually, you know, essentially what I'm saying is, I just don't trust Joel Embiid to be healthy for 82 games. Now, if I knew he was healthy for 82 games, then I would definitely pick Philly to be second. But the combination of Embiid's, and you know, I've always believed that the best indication of future behavior is past performance, and he just it's not his fault. He just hasn't stayed healthy. And that also being said, you know, Tibbs is going to be out there trying to win all 82 games.
Yep.
And so I think New York will have the edge in the regular season. I think Nick Nurse will play the long game with Embiid, which I think you have to. I think Paul George is a very good addition. I like the depth of both teams, but regular season depth, I like New York, but postseason depth, if they're both healthy, I like Philadelphia. So I pick New York second for the marathon. But if we get into a sprint and they're both healthy, I'm going to take Philadelphia probably.
Definitely makes sense. Like you said, Tibbs is a regular season guy. He's going to play those starters a lot of minutes. They're going to try to win all 82 games. And Nick Nurse, like you said, probably a little bit more patient with the long game. I just like some of the pieces around Philly that they've put in there. Andre Drummond is a very serviceable if you had to play him.
Yep.
I still think, if I remember correctly, I think they still have Paul Reed too. So it's not like they don't have multiple pieces in that front court. And then Tyrese Maxey, they ended up getting Kelly Oubre back again too. Yep. I definitely see where you're coming from.
Yeah. Paul Reed is no longer with them.
Oh.
No, yeah. He, Washington maybe, something? I can't remember for sure. So at the top. It looks like we are both in agreement there, the defending world champions. Yeah. And they have basically, you know, second verse, same as the first. Everybody.
Did you see Al Horford retired the other day?
That was a hoax or something.
Wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah, it was. Because I
the hook, line, and sinker.
Yeah. They got you there, buddy. But they got me for a few minutes as well, because I'm like, are you kidding me? So I started getting on Twitter. Did he really retire? I didn't see anything, and I just started checking ESPN. No, he didn't retire. He didn't retire. That was, I don't know what that was. It was some Yahoo doing some Yahoo-ish things or whatever. So Horford did not retire. But he will man the fort. You know, the one hole, of course, with Boston is, when is Porzingis going to be back? Can he be healthy in the playoffs? Of course, he wasn't healthy last year, and they still steamrolled through the East. Some of that had to deal with other teams got hit by the injury bug as well. So, but, you know, Drew Holiday, Derek White, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, that's the best foursome in the East, without a doubt. And Derek White is going to be, I would think, his confidence is even greater after being part of the Olympic team. Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown are probably a little PO'd about what happened with the Olympic team in their various roles. Sam Hauser has become a great player off the bench, just a great role player. He knows
Peyton Pritchard.
Yeah, Peyton Pritchard. Just really deep, really long, really good defensively, play very well together. Joe Mazzulla, a couple years ago, Tony, you and I, and especially me, I was beating him down, man. Hats off. I'll eat the crow. He got it going, and he got it figured out, and he stayed committed to who he was. And so, I think the Celtics are the choice here.
Yeah, and not just only in that league or in that division, but probably the entire league.
Yep. So, Tony, episode number 100. What a blast, man. It's been a blast doing this with you almost every week for 2 years in a row now. As I often say, it has been an honor and a privilege, my friend. And I'm so, I thought you would want to do this when I pitched the idea to you, and I'm so glad you accepted. And it's just been great to spend an hour or so with you every single week over the last year. And it's been a blast, man. It's just been a lot of fun.
Has been a lot of fun. You know, when you presented it to me, I was like, worst case scenario, we catch up with each other each week. Maybe it's just him and I that, you know, listen to it and stuff. But we've, you know, had some faithful listeners. So that's been good. I think we've touched on topics that are hopefully helping coaches. And, you know, I think the big thing is, if anybody wants help, we are definitely there for them to maybe not necessarily impart things to do, but maybe more so things not to do that we've learned the hard way.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I am thankful for your friendship. You know how I feel about you. And then I'm confident that you know how I feel. You know, it's just been compatible. It's just crazy that Bill Finley matched up these two knuckleheads almost 30 years ago, and we survived a few of those crazy nights down at the campus there at Iowa State University. But the great thing is, as I've often said about coaching, is the best thing that comes out of it is the relationships that you have with other people and other coaches. And I'm truly blessed to have you in my life, my man.
No doubt about that. You know, I would say the same thing. You know, just ditto the fact that consider you, you know, one of my best friends, you know, just like you're one of my brothers. And so it's just been good to check in each and every week, and 100 episodes in the book. I can't wait for the royalty fees to start kicking in. I'm sure Friends is going to be pissed as they get pushed off TBS, but it is what it is.
Yeah. Sorry, Chandler and Phoebe and Monica and Rachel. And yeah, the coaching staff is in the, yeah. Ross was annoying, by the way. Yeah. Didn't like Ross. He didn't deserve Rachel. He's whiny. Yeah. I didn't like it. So, but whatever. Episode number 100 in the book, folks. Of course, you know, we wouldn't keep doing this if people weren't listening. And like Tony said, I hope that we're helping you out. I think that we are. Hopefully we gave you some things here today. And one of the things, as you well know, we don't take ourselves too seriously. We want to give you advice. We want to share our experiences. But at the same time, I hope you've enjoyed kind of the stupidity that's gone along with this as well, that this is kind of who we are. And so it's been a lot of fun. So episode number 100 in the book. Sometime in the next few days, we'll come up with something with episode number for episode number 101. And we hope you like it. So coaches, as always, let's be sure to hone our craft one day at a time.